Oh, we got a big show today. A lot to talk about. Call-ups. Byron Buxton is back. And there's more. There's a big trade that went down. Well, I don't know if it's a big trade, but a trade nonetheless.
We're going to make medium-sized trade.
We're going to make a big deal out of it because that's what we do here on the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast on Thursday, August 20th. Adam Azer and Scott White, two-man show today. If you're not listening to our fantasy football podcast, you should be. And you should also be listening to our Sportsline podcast, The Opening Line, and our SEC podcast, The SEC on CBS. That's all I'm plugging today. Scott, how you doing? You ready for do the heavy lifting over there?
Yeah, I'm ready. Okay. It's not too heavy. We've done this before, Adam. We've done the two-man group many times over the years.
Yeah, but this time I'm just going to let you do everything. I'm not even you can even read the notes. I don't even care.
It was such a busy day yesterday, Adam.
It really was.
For late August, a lot happened.
It really was. So let's get right to it. Who would you rather have, Jackie Bradley Jr. or Byron Buxton?
I think it's pretty easily Buxton. As encouraging as Bradley's performance has been here recently, I don't think we should sell Byron Buxton's upside short because, I mean, this was... A lot of publications had him as the top prospect coming into the year, better than Correa, better than Bryant, better than Schwarber. And obviously his first stint didn't go very well, but it was hardly any at-bats. Since going back to the minors, because remember he had that DL stint and then he started at AAA, 22 for 55. That's a .400 average. In his last 35 minor league games, he's batting .378. He's obviously going to play every day with Aaron Hicks down, so... I think if it was his initial call-up, as opposed to a return trip, he'd be getting a lot more hype right now because he's that caliber of prospect.
If there's any reason to pick up Bradley over Buxton, it's this. Buxton is more owned and very frustrating because I tried to pick him up, but Buxton, I guess people didn't drop him like I thought. He was over 50% owned yesterday. Bradley is more available at 38% owned. So... With obviously, I wanted to pick him up and I couldn't because he was owned in every league I was in except for one. But 59% owned Buxton, he was so bad, 7 for 37. And if I remember correctly, and based on what you just said about his minor league numbers, he had been really awesome in the previous couple of weeks in the minors leading up to his first call. Then he goes 7 for 37 with 15 strikeouts. So yeah, I know we were going to say definitely pick him up, realize the upside, but. I don't know, like, who would you consider dropping? Would it only be someone that you don't really use for Buxton? Like, Delino DeShields, for example. Would you drop him for Buxton?
Yeah, I think that's a pretty easy call. It's probably a situation where in a five outfielder league, Buxton is already startable. So, you know, like a Marlon Byrd type, maybe you could drop him for Buxton too. In a three outfielder league, it might be a little harder to even get him on your roster. And because... This is a return trip for him, and he let us all down the first time. I don't know that you have to pick him up in a league that shallow necessarily, but you're going to want to keep a very close eye on him because he could have a monster finish. I mean, that much upside.
All right, would you rather have Kyle Schwarber or anyone other than Buster Posey?
Kyle Schwarber.
Number two catcher?
He is now for me, yes.
Do you see any... pitfalls with him? Is there anything that makes you think there's serious regression coming? I don't think he's going to slug over 600, so I'm not going to say he has to keep this up. But do you think he could have a Chris Bryant-like slump?
You know, he strikes out a lot, too. He struck out every third at-bat, basically, since getting the call-up. So that's always a possibility that the batting average dips to that 260 range when he stops homering at an inhuman rate, but you know, considering he's a catcher eligible player, it's hard to get too discouraged by anything he's doing now.
Pretty amazing. Every single day it's just like, oh gosh, we're homered again.
Seems like it. Yeah,
he's just been incredible. Yeah, as you mentioned, Aaron Hicks on the DL, by the way, with a hamstring injury. Tweet of the day number one is from Chris Towers. You know him. For next season, Miguel Sano or Chris Bryant?
I guess it's a worthy question. I still feel like Bryant is just, and I don't want to undersell Sano's upside because there's plenty of it too. And maybe I just got caught up in the Bryant hype this spring. I just feel like he's a little safer. They both have a lot of the same weaknesses, too many strikeouts. They both have tons of power. I think Bryant's a little older, and he played college ball, and Sano didn't. I just feel like there'll probably be a couple rounds of difference between those two next year.
Coming up on the show, we're going to look at Week 21 starting pitchers. Guys who went yesterday are two-start guys next week. I know you'll cover it a little bit tomorrow as well, but we'll get a head start today because right now you got to start thinking about weekly matchups, especially in head-to-head, and not necessarily rest of season expectations. We will talk about Corey Kluber. In fact, we'll do that in a few seconds. And Derek Holland had a good start. And Stephen Piscotty, Travis Shaw, these guys are keeping it up. So we'll get Scott's thoughts on all that. As he mentioned, very busy day. So let's start with tweets of the day, numbers 2 through 4. This was after I said something like, Corey Kluber is pitching terribly tonight. I said something like that. Or he is absolutely awful tonight. And, you know, this was last night. I was watching the game and he's just getting shellacked by the Red Sox. Ended up with a decent line, I guess, just because 1 walk, 9 strikeouts, but 6 runs on 6 hits and 4 homers in 6 innings. Ugh. So I said he's having a horrible night and got a lot of sarcastic tweets. Chris Leone said, yeah, but have you seen his FIP? Steven said, but the rest of that rotation, ... And Ryan said, that Indians pitching staff, though, LOL. And yes, I like the sarcasm because we have given Corey Kluber and some Indians pitchers a free pass for too long, Scott White.
Oh, come on.
Well, actually,
Kluber's had a good year apart from win-loss record.
It's funny. He actually has. He's got a 3.52 ERA, but here's a lesson to be learned. If you throw that many innings and strike out that many guys, you could have a 3.52 ERA and still be the number 15 starting pitcher in fantasy with an 8-13 record. And he's number 15 in both points and roto. So he has, just by innings and strikeouts, imagine if he were 10-10. He'd be top 12.
Yeah.
It is a little disappointing when you just look at the lines, but I guess I can't hate on Kluber too much because he has managed to be a very productive. I mean, 15th wasn't what we were expecting, but I can't exactly throw the word bust out there.
When it's mostly a product of win-loss record, and that's just luck at the draw. He has by far the most innings of any pitcher, so he's certainly doing everything he can to win games consistently, going 7-8 innings. So that's annoying. And as for the rest of the staff, dude, Carrasco and Salazar have been awesome lately.
Yeah, they've turned it around for sure. Now here's the thing with Kluber, though. I'm gonna look it up now. But watching the game last night, the home runs he gave up, at least the one to Ortiz and I think the one to Bradley. One of them was a curve. Regardless, talking like 93 mile per hour fastballs. And there have been some velocity issues with Kluber lately. Now, 3 of his last 5 starts were complete game, 1-run masterpieces. The other 2 have been really bad. I know you can't sit him. So you just have to kind of sit there and ride it out and hope for the best. But it is, you say it's mostly win-loss record, and that is kind of true, but it's also an ERA over 3.50. So there's some disappointment there, and there have been some bad starts.
Yeah, but the FIP, Adam, ERA shouldn't really be 3.50. He actually has a lower WHIP than he did last year when he won the Cy Young.
I know. So why is the ERA so much higher than the FIP?
Well, there were some issues early with the Indians' defense before they called up Francisco Lindor and Giovanni Urshela. I don't think that's so much a hindrance to Kluber anymore. And, I don't know what day they got called up exactly. It was different days for each of them, obviously. But, you know, last 19 starts for Kluber, including this one, a 3.04 ERA. So
it's pretty good.
Yeah.
Well, he was at 93 on average last night. Oh, no, that was 2 starts ago at Minnesota, which was a complete game. The velocity's down. I guess it's not impacting him so much because even at throwing 93, 94 miles per hour.
The velocity is the only reason we notice the velocity's down, and it's a subtle difference. The only reason we notice it is because he has a start like this. Like
He just hasn't quite looked. Same with Garrett Richards. They haven't looked quite
I agree with Richards.
Yeah, if you've watched them, they just haven't. Richards in particular haven't looked quite as sharp as they did last year. Kluber's breaking ball is still pretty incredible. But
yeah. Kluber's average fastball velocity, and it's been consistent for the last couple months, it's down 0.7 miles per hour from last year, but it's actually the second highest velocity of his career, average fastball velocity, to last year.
But he hasn't had that good of a career.
It's not really an alarming change to me.
All right. Well, Kluber's not a bust, but these guys might be. John Lester. So, similar ERA, 358. Kluber's is 352. Similar amount of walks, although the walk rate is different because the innings are different. Lester's over a strikeout per inning, but 1.23 whip compared to Kluber's 1.05 whip. Not as good of a walk to strikeout ratio, obviously. He had been pitching very well, but last night Lester got crushed, and now he is outside of the top 30 in the starting pitcher rankings. Is John Lester a bust?
No. Because it's mostly a matter of win-loss record for him, too. And it's the Cubs are a good team. Lester pitches deep into games. There's really no rhyme or reason for why some pitchers get burned by win-loss record, as long as those things are going in their favor. And, this was kind of an isolated event for Lester here. I know his ERA is up in the 350 range because it was such a bad start, but, he came into the game with a 269 ERA since April. So he has been as good, if not better, than he was last year.
A bit of a high whip, though. He's got a 1.23 whip this year.
Yeah, he's always been kind of that guy, last year being the exception.
Okay, this one, he's a bust. No disputing it. Anthony Rendon has sat each of the last two games and three of the last five, which is so frustrating because these games are at Colorado. You were thinking, finally, Rendon could have a big week, and he hasn't even played. And he's batting .247 with one home run in 39 games. Maybe he won't be terrible the rest of the way, but so far, I'm putting the bust tag on Rendon. And how worried are you right now?
That's fair. I mean, I think the biggest worry is the fact that Matt Williams seems to be losing confidence, and I think wrongfully, because in terms of strikeout-to-walk ratio, the doubles pace for Rendon, he looks like the same player as last year, just not many home runs, and lately the batting average has dipped a bit. I think if Williams just lets it ride, he'll be, and we'll all be pretty happy with what Rendon does over the last 6 weeks, but if Espinoza is going to creep into the picture here, and as long as that's going on, it's going to be pretty hard to start Rendon.
Trades and call-ups. The Dodgers acquired Chase Utley for two minor leaguers. One of them is Darnell Sweeney, and he is now a Philly, and he will be called up to play second base. The Phillies will pay $4 million of Utley's remaining $6 million, and Howie Kendrick, when he comes off the DL, which is estimated to be about 3 weeks from now, he will be the second baseman, he's been told. Utley is 15 for 31 with a home run and five doubles since coming off the DL. Only three strikeouts to one walk. But it's interesting. He might be... I don't know what's going to happen when Kendrick comes back. So is this good or bad for Utley?
I think it's bad because, I mean, obviously he's going to a better lineup, but there becomes playing time concerns now, as you mentioned. I don't think it really hurts his value in the short term with Kendrick on the DL. I would still be interested in adding him based on the way he's performed since returning, but A, it's not clear he's going to play every day even then because Enrique Hernandez, who had been filling in for Kendrick, has just mashed left-handed pitchers this year. Utley, obviously a left-handed batter, one who doesn't, or at least the last couple years, hasn't hit left-handers so well. So it seems like an ideal platoon situation if the Dodgers are willing to do that.
Oh, I think now, that they're the Dodgers. If any team's willing to do it, it's, well, them and like the A's, the Cubs, the Dodgers, that's the worst place to go if you want to play every day.
Yeah, that's a good point. And you know what? It may actually be bad news for Justin Turner as well, because the assistant GM for the Dodgers, and I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but he was talking to the media about this deal after the fact, and he mentioned the possibility that Utley could play third when Howie Kendrick comes back. But Justin Turner, I mean, and that's a situation where Justin Turner hits righties better than lefties kind of like Utley does. So it's not like it'd even be a clear situation based on matchups who would play when. And so, yeah, that's bad news whenever Kendrick does return. And really, it's bad news from a Corey Seager's perspective, too, because that's one more roadblock there at third base. I guess there's still the possibility he could come up and relieve Rollins at shortstop, but nobody seems to have much faith he can really play that position in the major leagues. So I'm not really expecting Seager to make a meaningful contribution in the majors rest of the way. And in a mixed league, you can probably drop him.
Well, it sounds like this trade was bad for just about everyone. Thank you, Scott, for that uplifting report.
I know. I'm just here to ruin your Thursday.
Well, at least you're not ruining our Friday. No. Philadelphia starting.
I can do that tomorrow.
Yeah, that perfect. So, yeah, and I'm not on the Friday shows, by the way, in case you guys haven't noticed. Chris is going to be more or less the permanent Friday host. I'm also going on a mini 2-day vacation next week, so I won't be here Monday or Tuesday either.
Good for you, Adam.
Yeah, thank you.
Hardest working guy in the business.
Is it worth a 4-hour drive for like 48 hours of vacation?
I think so. Yeah. 4 hours is, 4 hours is, yeah, you still get most of your day once the drive's over, you know?
Yeah. All right. Good. Well, I'm looking forward to it. So here's what's going on in Philadelphia. Darnell Sweeney's going to play second base. Jared Eichhoff, a starting pitcher, will make his major league debut tomorrow against the Marlins. And 2 days ago, the Phillies called up outfielder Aaron Altherr, who homered yesterday. And we hope he gets hot so we can say he's on an Altherr. Al, I'm sure, would hope for that. Are you interested in any of these minor leaguers, now major leaguers?
Well, Altherr, I mean, had a modest power speed showing in the minors. I could see him mattering in a lonely leagues if he plays every day. But I was probably even more, you know, for those deeper leagues, even more interested in the guy who he seems to have bumped from the lineup, Dominic Brown. So that's not really a net gain in fantasy. And I'm not sure we've seen the last of Brown playing for the Phillies. So I can't get too excited about Altherr despite the pun possibilities with his name.
Yeah, it's a shame. And the other guys? And Alonely?
Nah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, playing a deep enough league, anybody who plays matters.
I don't want to play in any of those leagues, Scott. I'm just not interested.
I understand.
Lance McCullers is coming back. 67% owned.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Expectations for him.
For how long?
I don't know.
Not long enough.
I am not an unnamed assistant general manager.
You know, Al Melchior got in a bit of a Twitter feud.
Oh,
with
yeah.
McCullers.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
You hear about that?
He sent me the link, but I didn't see the conversation, but Al Melchior got into a Twitter fight. I don't know if we should call it a fight, but Twitter dust up with Lance McCullers.
Yeah.
What the heck happened?
Well, Al called McCullers a sit, I believe, in his last pitcher column, which, you know, duh.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And I guess Lance McCullers caught wind of this. I don't know if he was searching himself on Twitter. I don't know. How often do baseball players do that? Do you ever Google yourself, Adam, just to see what's out there?
I have in the past, but only, but not, it's been like, hey, let's Google ourselves, you know? It hasn't been like a solo project where I'm very curious or anything like that.
No, you never have?
Yeah, I have, but I don't think, I've probably done it like amongst friends. Hey, let's see what happens when I Google myself. But I know now what comes up.
All right, so you just wanted to show off for people.
No.
Well, apparently Lance McCullers does this because he caught this tweet from Al and tweeted at him, haters going hate. Haters going hate.
Oh.
Verbatim there.
Haters going hate.
I think gonna would have worked better, or maybe slipping a two there.
Yeah, seriously, even the number two.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of juvenile, but at least it would be closer to accurate. Yeah, and then, I think there was some more other people jumping in defending McCullers, other people jumping in defending Al. I don't think Al really made much of a pushback, but
If that had been Chris who tweeted that and McCullers tweeted at him, haters go and hate, Chris would have been like, why don't you listen to this Taylor Swift song? Because it's haters gonna hate, 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 hate.
That's right.
Yeah. Any excuse for Chris to
shake it off. Shake it off, Lance McCullers.
And that's what Al's basically done. He's just they both should shake it off.
Yeah.
Okay, well, Lance McCullers coming back up, and do you think he's a must-own or must-add or anything?
No, I don't. I don't really.
He's listening. He's listening.
He sees you when you're sleeping. That's a Santa Claus reference. I don't know where that came from. But anyway, no, I don't really think he's going to be around long. Like, even if he has a great start, like, they could shut him down right after that. They could move him to the bullpen. I just don't think there's much trust to be had here.
Well, maybe you could start him in FanDuel, huh? Maybe you could do that. FanDuel is changing the way people play fantasy sports, and if you're not taking part, you should be, so go to FanDuel.com right now. Each day you wait could have been a win. You can pick a brand new team every single day. You don't have to worry about injuries. You don't have to worry about bad luck or BABIP or anything like that. Just pick a new team every day with the budget that FanDuel gives you. An entry fee start at just $1. There is no commitment. There are no sign-up fees, and you can play anytime you want, any day, all summer long, because FanDuel's paying out $2.5 million a day throughout the entire summer. Use our offer code CBSPOD to get our special offer, and that is, for every dollar you deposit, FanDuel's going to match it with up to $200 that gets earned as you play. CBSPOD is the code. Click the microphone in the upper right-hand corner and join our league, FanDuel.com/CBSPOD. It's just $2 a day. FanDuel.com/CBSPod Monday through Friday, and you can compete against us, and you can win $100. That doesn't sound so bad, does it, people?
It sounds like mostly good things, yeah.
Big news! Yasiel Puig may avoid the DL with a hamstring strain. Glenn Perkins got an injection in his neck. He's going to be out a few more days. Is there a Twins reliever that you'd be interested in picking up in case this is a more serious issue?
Paul Molitor's said it would be Kevin Jepsen who closed, and he's not great, but I think he'll get the job done. He's kind of on that Junichi Tozawa level.
Hanley Ramirez had a planned day off. Carlos Gonzalez was back in the lineup. Brandon Phillips left last night's game with biceps inflammation. Yvonne DeJesus replaced Brandon Phillips for the Reds. Denard Span making some progress. He's on a rehab assignment and feeling better. David Wright will come off the DL next week. Jason Hayward pinch hit last night. That's a good sign. How about Zach Godley back in the Arizona rotation? And Chase Anderson was sent to AAA. Any interest in Godley, who actually pitched out of the bullpen last night?
No, because that's all he's going to do, I think. He ran up on an innings limit, which is why he got sent down as well as he was pitching.
Oh, okay. I thought he was back in the rotation.
No.
Well, then don't pick up Zach Godley. And no. Billy Hamilton's on the DL with a shoulder injury. A bad season gets worse for Billy Hamilton. Some quick bullpen notes. Jake McGee for the Rays is having his knee checked out. He's a setup man, but Boxberger has been a little rough last couple outings.
Oh, yeah.
But McGee...
All second half.
Yeah. Well, with McGee banged up, probably gives Boxberger more security, wouldn't you think?
Yeah.
Wade Davis got to save for Kansas City. I'm guessing Greg Holland was unavailable.
I'm guessing, but it doesn't seem... It's not like he had gotten a ton of work recently. I couldn't really make sense of this. But he'd pitched better recently, so I don't think Ned Yost is suddenly having a change of heart.
Houston Street was unavailable. Joe Smith got the save. Andrew Miller was unavailable. And Dellin Betances got the save. Dellin Betances is the number 21 pitcher overall in Roto this year. He's got a 1.12 ERA. He has 6 wins. He has 8 saves. Now, Miller did go on the DL, but Betances probably, I don't know how many saves he had during that stretch. I don't think it was that many. Let's say he would have had like 4, if not for that DL stint. 26 walks, 101 strikeouts in 64 innings. He is the first Yankees reliever with 2 straight 100 strikeout seasons. And Betances, despite a 3.7 walk rate, 3.7 per 9, he has a .83 whip. Scott, you cannot hit Dellin Betances.
No, I can't. I can't hit any of these guys.
You couldn't even come close. And I didn't think he was really worth owning in a Roto League at the beginning of the year. I just didn't think that unless holds were a category, that it made sense to own any middle reliever. But I have seen the error of my ways.
Yeah, he's one of the rare exceptions to that rule. I don't really believe he's the 21st best pitcher in Roto. I think that's kind of a case of that formula overvaluing extreme outliers and single categories.
Right.
But I do think he's probably a guy you're going to start every week in that format.
Right. He's so good for your whip. But he's only pitched 64 innings. I mean, that's kind of there's only so much impact he can have on your whip in 64 innings. Drew Pomeranz got the save last night. First save for Oakland since August 8th. Would he be the closer reliever you'd want in Oakland, Drew Pomeranz?
I think so. And they've won so rarely, or at least needed saves so rarely since trading Clippard that, you know, it may be kind of irrelevant, at least from a mixed league perspective, but that could always change. They could go on a winning streak. Even bad teams do. Bob Melvin would only say he was my closer for today. He wouldn't commit to him in the role. But as a reliever this year, he has closer numbers, an even one whip, well more than a strikeout per inning, low two ZRA. And Edward Mujica has been terrible in the couple chances he's gotten. So I think Pomeranz, they're starting to recognize he's clearly their best reliever. It's possible.
All right, so with Buxton, with Pomeranz, with Piscotty, with Jackie Bradley, and maybe some other bullpen options. Derek Holland, who's 46% owned, had a very good start last night. This was actually a night, and it's been kind of few and far between lately, because at this point in the season, for me, I'm more or less set with my roster. I am making transactions, don't get me wrong, but I've got who I've got, and you know, I pretty much know who some of those waiver wire guys are. And if they're inconsistent, I'm ignoring them, whereas earlier in the year, I would have taken a shot. But what I'm saying is last night was a night where I really wanted to pick up a lot of players. It was an exciting night in fantasy baseball. Other than Buxton, who are one or two people that you wanted to add to your team?
I think other than Buxton, the top two for me are Derek Holland, coming back from a DL stint for a strained shoulder and looking good. And actually a guy who just continues to be undervalued, Derek Dietrich.
Right. Yeah, he was another guy.
Yeah, he's the everyday left fielder for the Marlins, so it's not like playing time's at issue anymore. Still second base eligible in fantasy. And he has, with another home run yesterday, a 903 OPS on the year now.
Would you go so far as...
Well, no, he didn't homer yesterday. Sorry.
Yeah, I think he doubled yesterday.
Yeah.
Would you go so far as to drop Colton Wong for Derek Dietrich?
No, I don't think so. And it would probably be a situation, you know, I'm talking up Dietrich here as undervalued, underowned. Probably deserves to be underowned in those head-to-head leagues with no middle infield spot where theoretically only 12 second basemen total need to be owned. But the fact that he's, hang on, finding the percentage here,
6%
owned. I mean, he should be about at least like 50, 60% owned.
Wow.
Just with Roto appeal.
Okay, so Derek Dietrich, underowned. Yeah, Derek Holland was really good. Would you rather have Derek Holland or Drew Hutchison?
Holland, easily.
I'm
not high on Hutchison at all.
Yeah, I don't see how anyone could be. Derek Holland or Nate Eovaldi?
You know, Eovaldi's kind of doing what Hutchison's doing and really thriving on win-loss record alone, so Hutchison.
Holland,
I mean, sorry.
Yeah, Holland, yeah. Holland or McCullers?
Holland.
I was very surprised at some of the ownerships from some of the pitchers yesterday. Holland at 46% actually seemed a little high to me. Now it doesn't, but Matt Cain, 50%, that seemed high to me. Mike Montgomery, 45%, that seemed high to me. Irvin Santana, 51%, that one I understand. Jesse Chavez, 46%. Are there any pitchers that I've named? Santana, Matt Cain, Chavez, Mike Montgomery, that you'd rather have over Holland, or is Derek Holland the best of that bunch?
He is, I think he's the best. Irvin Santana is really the only other comparable one. I guess you have to mention the sparp appeal of Jussie Chavez in leagues where that matters.
Right. All right, we'll get to more.
Obviously, he was great yesterday.
We'll get to more fringy starting pitchers in a second. Who did he face yesterday, Jussie Chavez?
The
Dodgers.
Yeah. Dodgers, okay.
Good start for him. All right, stat of the day. Here we go with some stats of the day. Number one, Ryan Braun is now Milwaukee's all-time home run leader. 252 homers for Ryan Braun. And a very nice year for him. He is the number seven outfielder in points leagues. Braun is number six in Roto. 22 homers, 18 steals. Very impressive, Scott.
And under the radar, I feel like, you know, for as much as people piled on him the last 2 years, he hasn't gotten nearly the attention he deserves for this. I'm in the process of writing up a column, you know, forecasting the first two rounds for next year. He's in them. He's there, mid-second round pick for me.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
And he's nearly 2020 already with 6 weeks to
go.
Yeah,
no, it's hard to replace that. All right, how about stat of the day number two? Philadelphia third baseman Andres Blanco entered the season with four career home runs in 638 at-bats. And he has three in his last four games. How about that?
That is so unexpected, I didn't even notice. Like, if I saw his name in the box score with a home run next to it, I was just, you know, okay, well, that's a guy I don't need to worry about.
Well, let me tell you how I found this stat out. Because, obviously, Franco's on the DL, and I saw that Andres Blanco had homered, and I thought to myself, I don't even know who's been playing third base for them. I just have overlooked it. And so I checked the game logs. I checked his, you know, game log, his player page to see how much he'd been playing. And I was like, holy crap. Andres Blanco has homered three times in four games. Does this guy have any history of this? And then I looked down at his career stats and no, he doesn't. So he's, 0% owned. Would you be picking up Andres Blanco in NL only leagues?
Well, if that guy they just got from the Dodgers is coming up to play second base, that would mean Cesar Hernandez isn't playing second base, which would mean he's probably playing third base. I don't know if it'll be every single day, especially since Blanco's hot, but they seem to think there's some long-term appeal with Hernandez, so I don't think Blanco plays much going forward.
How about the two home run club from last night? Nick Castellanos, Greg Bird, and Chris Davis. 39% owned Chris Davis. His third two-homer game of August.
K-Riss
Davis, yeah, sorry. Yeah. Chris Davis of Milwaukee. The other Chris Davis is more than 39% owned. In fact, the other Chris Davis, I was looking at the last 28 days, he's actually the number one third baseman ahead of Josh Donaldson, if you believe it or not.
Yeah, he has been, I think he has close to 20 home runs since the All-Star break.
Oh my gosh, really?
I'll look up the exact number, but yeah, him and Cruz both are like, yeah, it's unbelievable what they've done since the break. Okay, so I exaggerated a little. Yeah. 15 home runs since the All-Star break.
Pretty good. It's pretty good. Well, are you interested in Castellanos, Greg Bird, or Chris Davis? Greg Bird started with the injured Mark Triceratops.
If the Triceratops goes on the DL, he moves like a Triceratops. Probably.
Does sometimes, yeah.
It's a fitting name.
Uh-huh.
If he does, then yeah, maybe. Maybe I think we've invested a lot of energy talking down Greg Bird, but I think at that playing half his games at Yankee Stadium, the power potential could play up, and he's pretty good plate discipline guy, so I could see him surprising. I'd still rather have like Travis Shaw over him, even if Teixeira winds up on the DL, but I think this game at least makes him somebody to monitor.
Chris Davis or Jackie Bradley Jr.?
In Roto, I'd probably go Chris Davis, but he's home run or bust. So in a points league, I don't think he's going to be hot enough long enough to really matter.
Chris Davis or Torii Hunter?
Probably again, say Davis and Roto, but Hunter otherwise.
Next category. These guys were at it again. and we've talked about some of them, but Derek Dietrich, Stephen Piscotty has two home runs in his last four games. Would you rather have Piscotty or Shaw?
Piscotty.
And keep in mind, Matt Adams is rehabbing, but I suppose they could play Piscotty in the outfield, right?
I think they do.
Yeah, have been. Yeah.
They've been playing Moss at first base, right?
I think so. Matt Holliday is also rehabbing, but whatever. That's a ways away, I think. Yanhervis Solarte, last 28 days, number 3 second baseman in points, number 8 in Roto. Solarte batting .323, 4 homers, 6 doubles, 2 triples. Doesn't steal bases, but he's playing great, and Solarte is 49% owned. Would you rather have him or Dietrich?
Dietrich. Just the power potential is not even comparable.
Solarte is streaky. You think he'll probably just get cold and fade away like he always does?
Yeah, probably.
All right, one up, one down. One up is Edwin Encarnacion, 16-game hitting streak with .379 batting average, 4 homers for Edwin Encarnacion, 9 walks, 12 Ks, and 7 doubles. I know you were a little concerned about his shoulder. Are you more encouraged now?
Yeah, I am. I mean, there's still some concern there. He's a guy who actually has fallen out of my top 2 rounds for next year after being a first round guy the last few years. But I mean, he's must start, and I don't think you have any reason to upgrade there at the position.
Do you think he'll be better than Prince Fielder rest of season?
No, I don't, but I mean, it's 6-1 half a dozen the other.
Okay. One down, Carlos Santana, very disappointed. I really thought he was going to have a big second half, and I'd have to check the game logs. I didn't have time, but I feel like he started having a big second half, and he's gone cold. But Santana is the number 11 third baseman in points leagues, but he's number 18 in Roto, and since the All-Star break, he's batting .241, so it's .227 on the year. Last year, he batted, I think, .232, but at least he hit a bunch of home runs. Not so much this year, only 13 for Carlos Santana.
Yeah, he's pretty frustrating. I don't think I'm going to value him as highly next year. It makes sense for many reasons. He's obviously not catcher eligible like he was as recently as last year, and he's not going to be third base eligible anymore. He's going to be first base only, and you just can't trust him to offer high end production at that position.
Rotation time. Gosh, there really was so much from yesterday. Steven Strasburg. Booyah! Man, I didn't start him last night in my daily league at Colorado, but 7 innings, 1 unearned run, no walks, 5 strikeouts since coming off the DL. 20 innings, a 1.35 ERA, 12 hits, 25 strikeouts, only 2 walks.
Yeah.
He looks like he's back, huh?
If those first 2 starts weren't enough to convince you, start at Colorado. A 2-hitter at Colorado, which has been so consistently pitcher killer.
What was 7 innings, right?
What's that?
It was 7 innings, right? He didn't throw a complete game.
Did I say he did?
Oh, you said 2-hitter.
Yeah, I guess that was a confusing way to put it. He 2-hit them over 7 innings.
There you go. Yeah, pretty darn good. Jeff Samardzija was good. Does that make you trust him next week in a 2-start week, Boston and Seattle? He was good at the Angels, who just cannot hit right now.
And I'm not convinced Samardzija can pitch right now the way the previous 3 starts went. And even this one, I mean, it was good, but you add up the walks and the hits, divide them by the innings, it was a 1.43 whip. And that's been consistent for him. Even in the good starts, the hits have been really high.
So you're going to start him next week? 2 starts? No? All right, hey, Julio Teheran. All right. I don't know what to make of it, Scott. I'm encouraged, but 6 innings, 1 run, 7 strikeouts at San Diego. Last 4 road starts, 7 innings, 3 earned runs at Milwaukee. Then a bad one at Baltimore, 4 innings, 5 earned runs. Then 7 innings, 2 earned runs at Philadelphia. And then last night, 6 innings, 1 earned run at San Diego. We know the story with Teheran. Great at home this year, bad on the road, but maybe just more encouraging signs lately. And San Diego actually had been hitting pretty well before last night. So I think he has 2 home starts next week. You're starting him there. But do you feel good about Teheran going forward?
I know he's faked us out a few times this year. I'm going to say again, he's back.
Ah, oh, right.
You just take, since the beginning of July, 9 starts, 3.25 ERA, more than a strikeout per. A lot of swinging strikes, so I think he's back.
I will no longer disagree with you about Alex Wood. I just holding out hope for too long. Bad start again last night at Oakland. A lot of walks since coming to the Dodgers. He's made 4 starts. He's walking 4.2 batters per 9. Alex Wood has the Reds on the road and the Cubs at home next week. What do you think?
Unless it's to use him in a relief pitcher spot, which I think is mandatory, I'm probably not going to use him.
And Noah Syndergaard, 5 innings, 3 runs, 8 hits, 2 walks, 6 strikeouts. It was absolutely a struggle for him. Loaded the bases with nobody out in the first inning, managed to get out of that jam, but was just pitching in and out of trouble last night. And he has a 5.05 ERA on the road, and it's a little weird.
Mm-hmm.
Do you worry about Syndergaard on the road?
Not really. I kind of worry about him just the way he's going to finish the year, because he's basically right at his career high in innings now, and a lot of times that's when you see these young pitchers kind of stumble to the finish line. He's going to keep pitching, and they want to increase his innings, but it you may need to lower your expectations for him slightly going forward.
All right, tell me starter sit for next week. Mark Burley at Texas, home against Detroit.
Sit.
Nate Eovaldi, Houston and at Atlanta. Houston at home, at Atlanta.
Yeah, I don't love him either. I'd say sit.
I feel like I'd like him in a points league, but in a roto league, I'm a little worried about what he'd do to the whip and maybe even the ERA.
But they always true for Burley. It's kind of true for most pitchers who aren't prone to disaster.
I think that's the big big difference between points and roto. It's hard to sit a 2-star guy in points, but in roto you have more to consider.
The key with the points league, and maybe the better way to put it is, is he worth clearing a roster spot for the 2-start week?
Mm-hmm.
And I would say they're both more owned than they probably should be, but if they aren't owned, Burley and Eovaldi, I wouldn't clear a roster spot for them.
Jared Weaver is at Detroit and at Cleveland.
I might do him. He's been very reliable since coming back from the DL. It's only 3 starts, but he's looked better.
Yeah, the only problem is he is, well, I don't have the exact stats, but he's not throwing a lot of pitches. I don't know if they're being extra cautious with him.
Yeah.
Nathan Karn, speaking of not throwing a lot of pitches, he was great last night, but 5 straight starts for Karns of 86 pitches or less. But Minnesota and Kansas City at home next week.
It's not too unlike, not specifically the pitch thing, but the number of innings it translates to. It's not too unlike Eovaldi. For some reason, Evaldi's getting wins.
Well,
I guess Karns' peripherals a lot better.
It makes sense that Eovaldi would get wins over Karns.
Right.
But the Yankees
I
do.
Guess, but if you're consistently, Eovaldi's gone 6 innings, it reached the 6-inning mark in just 3 of his last 9 starts.
Right.
Like, if you're not going 6 innings consistently, you should not be winning games.
I'm going to look it up, but I wouldn't be surprised if he has the most run support in baseball.
Yeah.
Which is not something you want to rely on. This guy, I think, might get picked up. It's a bit risky, quite risky. Irvin Santana at Tampa Bay and home against Houston next week.
Yeah, it seems worth rolling the dice with those matchups.
You think so?
I think so. The highs are still high, but yeah, lows have been very low.
Matt Cain, Chicago and St. Louis at home.
That 1 start's not enough to win back my trust. And when they get Mike Leake back off the DL, which is coming next week, I think.
Sunday.
Okay, so they're going to have to make a decision between Vogelsong and Cain. Cain probably moved back ahead with this performance, but Vogelsong's been good recently too.
And how about Derek Holland? Now, I think maybe you want to pick him up for sure, but you might not want to start him next week. He's got Toronto at home and Baltimore at home. Toronto just destroys lefties.
Yeah, they do. I think I would pass on him, give him another chance, give him a little longer to prove himself.
And don't necessarily drop him if he has a bad week. You know, those are tough matchups.
Right.
Jesse Chavez Seattle, one start week for Chavez against Seattle.
Only as a sparp.
Mike Montgomery, Oakland and at the White Sox.
No, I'm done with him.
Yeah, 45% owned. That's just surprisingly high. Maybe people have just quit.
Maybe. Yeah.
Robbie Ray, St. Louis and Oakland.
I wouldn't really make an effort to get him. You could do worse if you want a two-star guy.
Leaders in run support this year. Not a huge surprise. Drew Hutchison, number one.
Yep.
Mark Burley, number two.
Okay.
Colby Lewis, number three.
Yeah, he's got a lot of wins, too.
And Nate Eovaldi, number four.
That, given their win-loss records compared to everything else, that is probably a very revealing list. Yeah.
Rupi De La Rosa, five, and Anibal Sanchez, six. Those guys haven't done quite as much with the run support.
Yeah, can a good pitcher get up in that group?
Francisco Liriano, seven.
All right.
Yeah, there you go. Chris Tillman, top 10. Deeper leagues, Joe Kelly, Adam Morgan. They've been pitching better lately. Kelly has two starts at the White Sox and at the Mets. Adam Morgan has the Mets at home and the Padres at home. Would you gamble on either of those guys in deeper leagues?
No.
Okay, me either. Injuries, news, and notes. Hunter Pence on the DL, and he's hopefully going to just miss 2 weeks. Nori Aoki was activated. That's a guy I kind of like in FanDuel tonight, Nori Aoki at 2,600 if he's playing, especially if he's leading off, because Pagan's out, Pence is out. He could easily lead off. Mike Leake will be back Sunday. I think it's Sunday. You know what? McCullers is Sunday. Leake is sometime within the next few days, by Sunday. Carlos Gomez did not start. He has the flu. Daniel Norris, Tigers pitcher, going to go on the DL with an oblique injury.
Mm.
Josh Hamilton, day-to-day with a knee injury, could end up on the DL. Milwaukee's going four-man rotation for the time being. Tyler Cravey out of the rotation. Matt Adams getting closer to a return. Would you care about picking up Matt Adams?
Maybe if I needed some power in a roto league, but I think between guys like K-Riss Davis and I don't know who else.
Yeah, Piscotty, Shaw.
Yeah, right. I don't think Adams really stands out.
Omar Infante should be back soon. Angel Pagan looking at August 25th. And that's it. We'll read some emails and then do some FanDuel. Email from Ryan. It says, Dear Dalton, Wade, and Wesley.
Wade and Wesley.
I don't know who those people are.
Not ringing a bell.
What kind of fantasy baseball format would you give the most respect to someone for winning?
Most respect. I respect you now. I didn't before, but now I do.
Because you
won a fantasy
won
baseball league.
Yes. And that's because you won blank tournament or blank league. It's easy.
I think it's
roto.
I don't think that. No.
I think it's roto.
Why?
Because you have to be better than everyone else in your league throughout the entire year, whereas in head-to-head formats, you can just get lucky or unlucky on a week-by-week basis.
Okay. I guess I could see that. I think I would make an even clearer distinction as opposed to roto and head-to-head with like a 12-team mixed league versus a 12-team AL or NL-only league. I think a lot of people say, oh, you won an AL-only league, only the best of the best play there. But I think there's a lot more luck in those formats because there's no waiver wire.
Yeah.
So if guy gets injured, I mean, you can't necessarily predict that.
I completely agree.
You could be a better player and lose because of it. But when you're able to actually maneuver through the season's highs and lows and you come out on top, provided everybody else in your league is doing it too. I think a lot of times in those mixed leagues, there's less participation in general. But provided everyone's playing hard too, I respect that win the most.
Right. And you, for example, stashed Kyle Schwarber after he got sent down. And you stashed Miguel Sano. And now you have overtaken me in our roto league.
Yes, sir.
Which is really, really bothering me a lot because I was in first place for I don't know, 2-3 months. And I thought I had that league. But yeah, you've Schwarbered and Sano'd your way to the top. Also, you have McCutchen. So those three guys are the three of my most important players in my big money league. So it's like, I can't root against you and for me at the same time. There's no way I could win both. It's a very frustrating situation.
I hope you win the other league and not this one. I want your respect, Adam.
Yeah, you have my respect.
Oh, thank you.
This one is from Chad in Budapest. Oh, by the way, Ryan is hating on Aerosmith. He says, I know two Aerosmith fans. Both of them are dorks. Start listening to blues rock and drink whiskey. Good day, sir. I just don't get this. Oh, and his Dalton, Wade, and Wesley is from the movie Roadhouse, which I've never seen. Oh. Now we go to Chad in Budapest. Dear Sammy, Andre, and Jorge.
Those are Cubs right fielders.
Yeah. I can keep three of these players for next year in a 10-team head-to-head points league. Which three should I keep? Rusne Castillo, Steven Matz, Arodis Vizcaino, Luis Severino, Raisel Iglesias, and Taylor Youngman. Vizcaino has added value because we start four relief spots.
That is a pretty ugly group for a 10-team league.
Yeah.
Sheesh. Matz, I think, is number one. I guess Vizcaino with the relief pitcher situation. I think Youngman edges out Severino, even though Severino has more upside, obviously. There's not enough turnover in a shallow league like this that you need to, like, wait around for a guy.
Ooh, I don't know. Severino has much better stuff than Youngman. I have this fear that Youngman is not legit. I couldn't pass up Severino. And actually, if you need four RP spots, I don't know if Raisel Iglesias is going to be RP eligible next year. Do you? He definitely made some bullpen appearances this season.
I will look it up real quick.
If he finishes strong, I wouldn't be opposed to keeping him.
If he does, but no, he's not going to be relief pitcher eligible. Okay. Only two relief appearances this year.
Okay. Here's one from Randy. While Aerosmith is a great classic band, which I thoroughly enjoy, there is just no way they are better than Metallica. Aerosmith is a poor man's Metallica. No, Aerosmith is a poor man's combination of Led Zeppelin and The Who, while Metallica is in their own category. Not hating on Aerosmith at all, but it's no comparison for me.
You know, I can't really get into music arguments because I think there's nothing more subjective than musical preference. Like, what objective standard do you apply? Maybe I just don't know enough about, you know, the technical aspects of music to be objective about it, but I
think that, well, first of all, like, you're right, and I agree and disagree. So music, there are no right or wrong answers. It's art. It's up to you. It's up to what you want to listen to in music. If you like horrible pop songs that I think are horrible, and they have absolutely no musical merit, there's nothing original about them, you know, the lyrics are terrible. That's up to you. That's great. Good for you. I'm not going to judge you for that.
Do you not consider Taylor Swift?
I did think Taylor Swift was good, but now I think she is like a bubblegum pop star. You know, like, her songs are dumb now.
Where's Chris Towers?
Well, I know he would just...
through the glass like the Kool-Aid man.
Yeah, I used to think that Taylor Swift was solid. I didn't have a problem liking her songs. Now I think her songs are just catchy. That's all they are. They don't make you think. They're not like, you know, they're not like classic songs or anything like that, which is fine. Whatever. That's great.
It's like, gonna hate.
Yeah, sure. Maroon 5. They have gone from being, I thought their first album was actually they were like a good pop rock band. And now they are the worst thing in music history they're terrible. I cannot stand every Maroon 5 song that comes out is worse than the last one. Just terrible. So I think it's a little bit, you know, it's subjective, but also there are things you could look for in music, like, in my opinion, good guitar solos and,
yeah,
you know, good musical, playing of musical instruments rather than just like these backbeats and synthesizers and stuff like that. But, I think Aerosmith is better than Metallica because they've done it longer, and I do like Metallica, but I feel like all of their songs are pretty much the same. So I know you're going to disagree with me, most people out there, but, I'm giving Aerosmith the leg up. Next up is from Brad. I have Odor and Cano in a keeper league. I can keep eight. Should I keep both? Or would you advise one over the other?
I would advise Odor over Cano.
Okay. And here's from Evaristo. Is it time to give up on Anthony Rendon? Would you drop him for Chase Utley or Miguel Sano?
Ooh. Well, with the questions about his playing time, I could see Sano unless it's a keeper scenario. I do still like Rendon more going into next year than Sano.
Yeah, but you definitely don't drop him for Utley.
No.
How about some DFS? Did you make a lineup yet?
I have not.
Okay, so to me, there are two pitchers that I want. I think it's pretty obvious to avoid Scherzer at Colorado. He hasn't been pitching great, and this is not when you want to start Max Scherzer.
Unless it's a tournament scenario. Like, I was going to set a Strasburg tournament lineup yesterday to be, like, against the grain, you know? But I ran out of time.
Actually, I think there are three pitchers that you could want, because I don't know why I discounted Chris Archer. 11,900, the most expensive pitcher, but at Houston, I don't think he gets the win, but there's a great chance he strikes out double digits. So he seems like a good bet. I think I'm going to go with Arrieta at home against Atlanta. Strikeouts have been down for Arrieta, but... And Jose Quintana is a sneaky play at 8,200. The Angels have the sixth or seventh lowest OPS in baseball against lefties, the second lowest OPS against lefties in the American League, and they're just, with Trout hitting the way he's hitting, the Angels are just not doing anything right now. Look what Jeff Samardzija did to them last night. So those are the guys I would look at.
Yeah, Arrieta. I don't want anybody else. Jake Arrieta is my guy.
Yeah. That's
most underrated pitcher in baseball.
Very well could be. Absolutely. Setting a lineup. I didn't get a chance. There was one matchup I wanted to look at. It was the Boston matchup. It was Wade Miley facing someone lousy for Kansas City, I think. I don't remember. I'll try to look that up. But can you look that up if you get a chance?
Yeah, Danny Duffy.
Oh, okay, he's not that lousy. But I wanted to see Miley's splits and if the Royals had any good history against him, which they probably don't since he's been in the NL. I have Prince Fielder. I like left-handed Tigers against Alfredo Simon. Is terrible against lefties. OPS is 896 for lefties. So I have Fielder.
Kind of terrible in general. I wouldn't be way he's pitched recently. I wouldn't be afraid to start righties against him either.
Yeah, most of their good hitters happen to be lefties anyway. But yeah. Fielder is 3,400, pretty cheap for a first baseman.
Oh, yeah, that's great.
Odor is 3,500, which is a decent price. Mm. Delino DeShields is 3,500, also a decent price. You don't like that?
No, that's too much for Delino DeShields.
I think Ellsbury might be the same, and I could do that swap. Yeah, he is the same. All right, I'll swap out. They're facing Josh Tomlin. So I will swap out DeShields and put in Ellsbury. Scott, thank you.
Cool.
I like Todd Frazier because I need to save money because of Arrieta, and he's 2,800, and I know he's been kind of cold, but I thought he was coming out of it last week. I still think 2,800 is too low for him. I think 3,200, Starling Marte, that's too low. He's been four straight games with an extra base hit. He's been hot, facing Jake Peavy.
He's a lot better against left-handers than right-handers, so I don't think it's a slam dunk, but.
Okay.
It's decent.
And I like Dexter Fowler against Mike Foltynewicz at 3,100. I like that one a lot, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Foltynewicz struggles against lefties, and Fowler switch hitter. So you've got my lineup. Also, I have Salvador Perez in there, and Eugenio Suarez against Patrick Corbin, 2,600. Suarez is good against lefties, right?
Not sure.
Okay.
Not sure. It'd be tough for me to start somebody against Corbin. Frazier at the price.
But. It was the last position I filled.
Yeah.
And I had 2,600 left. I could go down to Alcides Escobar facing Wade Miley. That is a possibility. But left-handed Rangers is where I'd start. I think Ellsbury. Mm-hmm. I think Brett Gardner, actually, if you want to save a little more money, I wish he were more like 2,800. I think he's like 31 or 3,000. So I'd rather spend extra $100 on Fowler. And that's all I got. Anything to add?
There are a few other pitchers to pick on here. That's usually where I look when I start to set my FanDuel lineup. We hadn't mentioned the Marlins yet. Jerome Williams, Derek Dietrich has been very affordable all week and still 2,900. As hot as he is good. If you need to go cheap at first base, Justin Bour at 2,200. He's been fine. And against Jerome Williams, I think that's a good play. Phillies on the other side are facing Brad Hand. I think that's a pitcher to pick on. Though after they traded Utley, if Cesar Hernandez is in the lineup, he's always been good against lefties. So he might be an option for you.
Yeah, he's 3,100.
Yep. Where do they have him now? Second or third?
Second base.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's a good call.
And obviously, keep your Nationals in if you, whatever you can afford against Johan Flandt at Colorado. Even Jason Wirth has gotten rolling there.
Danny Espinosa's 3,200. Rendon is 3,400. So you have to check the lineup.
Mm-hmm.
Wirth is 3,800.
It might be a little high.
Yeah, I wish Desmond weren't so high. He's 4,200. He's, I think, the most, most expensive shortstop. Yeah, he is tied with Carlos Correa.
But maybe Michael Taylor. He's been under 3,000 all week. Hasn't had a great game yet, but there's always a chance at Colorado.
Sure. All right, Scott, thanks a lot, sir.
Thank you, Adam.
Join our contest, FanDuel.com/CBSPod, and watch Daily Fantasy Live at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. For Scott White, I'm Adam Azer. Chris Towers will run the show tomorrow. Talk to you then.